Welcome. You are listening to the Profiles in Leadership podcast with Steve Anderson, sponsored by VGM Advantage. This is Season 1, Episode 8. I am your host, Steve Anderson, and today we will be speaking to Stacy Menz about pediatric and private practice physical therapy. Stacy is a pediatric clinical specialist and the owner of Starfish Therapies. Stacy received her master's degree at Boston University in 2000 and her doctorate degree of physical therapy at Boston University in 2005. She has experience as a tech teaching lab assistant for Boston University, South College, and Chapman University's Doctorate of Physical Therapy programs, and has presented at state and national conferences and teaches continuing education courses for pediatric physical therapy. She is the editor of Impact Magazine, the Private Practice Sections Magazine, and is a board member for Keene San Francisco. In addition, she is involved in both her state and national pediatric physical therapy sections. She has also been interviewed on Sirius XM's Doctor Radio regarding pediatric orthopedic conditions. Welcome, Stacy. It's great to have you on the program today. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Why don't you just start off with the sharing with us and the listeners here, just what was your journey to get into physical therapy school? Where'd you grow up? How'd you decide on physical therapy? And just kind of tell us how you got it all started.
Sure. So I feel like a little bit of a random journey to physical therapy school and getting started. I thought I wanted to be an engineer. And my mom asked me, do you know what an engineer does? And I said, no. So I went to the library and I read a paragraph on engineering. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do that. And I flipped through the book and I saw physical therapy. And I read about a paragraph on that. And I thought, that sounds like fun. I play sports. You know, maybe I'll look into this. And I went to visit my guidance counselor because that was when we were doing the college planning.
Right.
And there was a book on Boston University. And I pulled that down and I said, oh, they have a 5-year master's program. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And I applied early decision and got in, and that was my PT journey. I hadn't even visited the school before I went.
Wow, that's a lot of faith to do that. So are you from the West Coast originally then?
No, I am from New Jersey originally.
Okay.
And so Boston was
not
my
too far
first
away.
Intro into living in a city,
okay.
And it was close enough I could get home, but far enough that my parents couldn't just surprise me.
Okay, great. So you went to Boston University PT school, and somehow you ended up in the beautiful city of San Francisco, which is about as far away from New Jersey and Boston as you can get. So how'd you get out there?
So when I came out of When I went into physical therapy school, it was the career to be in. There was sign-on bonuses, name your price, that, you know, there was jobs galore.
Right.
I came out of school right after the Balanced Budget Act passed.
Oh, boy.
And okay. There was no jobs. And I remember interviewing at a place I wanted to work at. And as a business owner, I now cringe when I hear this. However, I was told, there's nothing. Take what you can get and keep looking for what you want.
Oh, wow.
And so I was living in New York City at the time. And I ended up doing a brief stint in adult ortho, which was never what I wanted to do. However, doing it in Midtown Manhattan was a blast.
Yeah.
And I was glad I had that experience. But then I ended up getting a job at the hospital I had done my last internship in, and it was a teaching hospital. So I started in adult acute care. I had gone to school to work with kids, but knowing what the job market was, I was like, I'm going to just continue to learn what I can learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent the next 5 years doing acute care because during that time I decided, you know, I'm from the East Coast. I might end up never leaving here. And I was 25 and I decided, let's try the West Coast. So I moved to San Diego and it was just easier to get a job in what I already knew.
Yeah.
I did hit a point where I became a little bit professionally bored. Not that there wasn't more for me to learn, but I just wasn't sure where I was going with my career.
Yeah.
And it was at the same time that Boston University sent out postcards about their transitional DPT program that was going online. And so I ended up participating in that program, getting my transitional DPT through BU. And when I finished that, I said, you know, I went to school to work with kids. 5 years later, I'm still working with adults and loving it, and I've learned a lot, but I'm going to see what else is out there. Mm-hmm. And that's how I ended up in San Francisco, as I took a job up here working with kids.
Wow. That's quite a journey. You know, it's interesting you said that you were maybe professionally bored or whatever. It's you know, I've run across that a fair amount lately from new grads that kind of had a idealistic view of what physical therapy might be like and excited to do it, and then kind of hitting the ground and not really discovering that. And then it's such a field that everybody wants to be in, it's almost like it's hard for them to admit that, you know, this isn't really what I thought, or I'd like to maybe do something different. And so not only are you not satisfied, but you're almost afraid to admit it or tell anybody. Did you feel that way?
Yes, I actually had what I call my midlife crisis. Okay. While I was doing my transitional DPT, I was living in San Diego, and I decided, you know, I've always wanted to try acting. And so I went to per diem at my hospital that I was at, and I went and took an 8-week intensive acting class.
Wow.
And got an agent and spent another 2 months commuting between San Diego and LA. Until I decided that that wasn't the lifestyle I wanted to live, and I could never pull the plug to move to LA.
Yeah, did you get some jobs in the industry? Were it good? Should I watch a movie you were in or anything?
I was on 3 episodes of The Bold and the Beautiful.
Really? So, wow.
Yes. Okay. That's my random fact or tidbit of information. But what it did was it helped clarify that, you know, I was glad I did it. I don't ever have any regrets, but at the same time, I was finishing my DPT and realizing, okay, I'm going to go look into pediatrics because that's what I had always wanted to do. And so that gave me that other avenue to continue to grow and stimulate myself and figure out what it really was I wanted to do with physical therapy, because I actually really love the critical thinking and the problem solving and having to get creative and looking at the pieces of the puzzle to find the solution. And I just had found myself getting in a rut and not really utilizing that part with what I was currently doing. And like I said, there were still more areas to grow in, but I wasn't taking advantage of them.
Yeah, it's interesting. So if you look back on that short but exciting acting career, what did you learn there that maybe you can apply now to your patients? That is there some lesson, or is there something you gained from that that you feel made you a better PT?
That's actually a really interesting question, and I hadn't thought about that before. I would say the biggest thing I learned was that even though you're playing a role, you always do best when you bring who you are to that role. Mm-hmm. And so you're just really authentic in it. And I think that that actually carries over really well. Especially working with kids, they know when you're just phoning it in for the day.
Yeah, that's
so
really interesting.
So really just being authentic and, you know, kind of putting everything else to the side, I would say is what I got from that without realizing it, that I use in my PT work.
Yeah, so and saying it in another way, you're vulnerable. You're willing to be vulnerable. And it's interesting you say that as someone who has not worked in pediatrics, but having 3 kids of my own, I'm sure that's true, that they know whether you're authentic, they know whether you're being vulnerable, they know if you really care about them or you're just punching a clock.
Yes, and I can tell you I start off with an off day, I either have to learn to change my attitude really quick, because from that first patient till the last patient, they will all have like a temper tantrum or refuse to do anything, you know, so it's clearly me because I'm the common denominator with every situation. So I have to either switch or my whole day is going to be an uphill battle.
You're in San Francisco now. Is that your first jump into private practice ownership, or did you start somewhere else and then eventually get to San Francisco?
I started in San Francisco. So I moved up here for the pediatrics job.
Okay.
And while I loved what I did, it was owned by a parent of a child with special needs. And I found that I was butting my heads a lot with the way things were being run because she just didn't have the awareness of what our license requirements were. And I felt like there was a lot of times my license was being potentially put in jeopardy if I didn't know any better.
Right, right.
And luckily I had had a lot of experience that I could say, hold up, this isn't right. And so just because she was a parent and didn't necessarily come from a business aspect or didn't come from a therapy aspect, you know, when I look at running a business, it's there's different tiers. It's your employees, it's your patients, and then it's the business side. And I constantly felt like the employees were the lowest priority for her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just because she didn't know any better. So I had reached a point, and I've always been really tried to be really good about giving plenty of notice, especially with kids. It's so hard. They come, you know, it's not like they come for 10 visits and they're done.
Right.
We work with kids that are disabled and therapy is part of their lifetime. They may take therapy vacations. And it may change over the years, but they will come back or stay on long term. And just to drop off with a 2-week notice doesn't work. So I gave plenty of notice, and we had had a therapist covering over the summer there that was doing some early intervention work. So going into the patient's homes for the 0 to 3 population, and she was just an independent contractor. And so when I met her, I had started looking into that, and I got vendorized with our regional center, who is the funder for early intervention in California, and started picking up a few clients so that when I gave notice probably in October to leave at the end of the year. And by the time I left, I already had a few cases on my caseload, but I did leave, you know, just planning on doing some early intervention. And then down the road, some of my old patients found me and heard that I was on my own. And so they looked me up and started calling me to see if I could come work with their kids. And next thing you know, my caseload was full. So I put an ad out on Craigslist and said, anybody looking for PT work? And I hired my first employee, and she's still with me to this day. And I think that's probably about 9 years later.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, it's intriguing to me that, you know, here you are. If I was to look at this, you know, from the front side, okay, you're in San Francisco, yes. Very competitive area, very expensive area. You're in pediatrics that has a reputation for being even tougher on reimbursement and getting paid for your services than other areas. And so now you're just jumping right in into, you know, 2 big hurdles in front of you, and you've been able to make it work. So it's exciting. What do you think has given you the ability to keep it going all these years?
I think that in the beginning, I would say just pure like enthusiasm and will, where it's like failure's not an option. You know, we hit this hurdle, because there's definitely been a lot of hurdles. Over the last 10 years, I would say, though, the biggest thing has been the support network. And that includes my family and other people in the industry that I have met that I can lean on when I have questions or, you know, I'm wondering, why do I do this?
Right.
My employees also, I really work hard to try to create a feeling of family and ownership with everybody. So even though they're employees, like I want them to take pride in the company and to look at what we're creating and make sure that they have a say in it as well. And, you know, so if I'm having an off day, I'm pretty open, and they're really great at support. My support network is really great at like continuing to propel me forward and then keeping an eye on the long-term vision. And for us, it's that vision of, you know, creating a world where kids of all abilities are included.
So thinking about private practice physical therapy, you know, the typical orthopedic clinic is, there's a lot of people out there doing it. There's a lot of competition. Is pediatric private practice physical therapy pretty rare? And what's your feeling about that and why?
So I don't know that I would say it's rare. However, a setup like mine is rare in that I have a clinic and I have employees. There's a lot of pediatric physical therapists that are one person. They're independent contractors, and they will, because of the way early intervention, at least in California, so this is my only experience seeing it on the ground, is there's a lot of individuals that will go get early intervention contracts, and so it's great for the mom that wants to get back to work, but doesn't want to have a 9-to-5 job. They can set their schedule more. Or there's a lot of work in the school districts, so they may be working for the school system. Otherwise, the competition is the hospital systems, and they generally have a waiting list, or they don't do long-term care, so they'll see patients for a short period of time, but they can't see them for months on end, so they will refer to us.
I see.
So I really try hard to, like, collaborate with what I guess would be looked at as my competition in the area, so that we're all working together, because there's plenty of kids to go around, and there's plenty of kids that need our services, and it's just a matter of what's going to be the right fit at that time for the child, whether it's they need to be seen in the home, so maybe they're getting early intervention, or somebody that can just, you know, go to their house, where we will do that a little bit, but our focus is on building the clinic up.
So how do you market building that clinic? So do you market the physicians? Do you market the hospitals for the overflow? Do you market agencies? I suspect it's a little bit different than maybe just your typical orthopedic practice.
I would suspect so also. I will say that we had never really done any formal marketing other than a newsletter, some social media. We had a social media presence. I do a blog, but we had never done any formal marketing. I'd never done a doctor's visit up until this past November. So we just really started rolling out more of a quote-unquote marketing campaign, where we redid a lot of our marketing materials. And so that was our first stop. We just went and dropped it off at doctors' offices. And then it was like every couple of months we would take them. If we had a new program happening, we would drop by and drop things off. And I'm still not sure that we're doing it the right way. We're kind of figuring this out as we go along. I will say that we have seen direct referrals from doctors jumping up more, where they're telling families about us. And I know that we have direct access, and we get a ton of people that have just heard about us or done their own research. But it is also nice to have the doctors knowing about us and sending people our way. We've also spent time getting to know the therapist at Stanford and UCSF so that they can tell families, because families will travel to these big pediatric hospitals, but that might not be where they live. So then therapists have to help them find therapy for closer to home. And so we've gotten referrals that way. We'll definitely do some events within the community. We look to mom and we look to parents clubs to do advertising.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We put stuff up at libraries. We use Facebook because we have some developmental play groups. So looking more on that, like, wellness side, where it's inclusive. So it's not just kids with special needs, but for parents that have questions. So just really trying to get people to know that we're here more than that they already did.
And do you have to get over that hurdle of, you know, when you're dealing with parents and their children are, you know, everything to them, sometimes it's like, oh, we have to go to Stanford, or we have to go to, you know, some big facility that has the big name. And so to convince them that you can provide the services that will benefit their child to the highest degree in a private practice, I imagine is a bit of a hurdle to get over sometimes.
Yes, but what we found is, especially when we get the word of mouth referrals, that's really helpful from other parents telling parents about us. And what we found is once parents come here, they feel at home here. And I think we redid a lot of our mission and values and vision this past year to kind of coincide with our 10 years. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we talked about is, like, what makes us unique and why do people like to come? And we realized that it's because when they come, they feel at home. And so we have families that have come back after a few years, and they're just like, oh, so nice to be here again, you know?
Yeah, so it's almost like an extension of the family, so to speak.
Exactly. So we don't make it feel clinical. You know, if you walk into my office, it's not going to look anything like an outpatient ortho place would. We have a dog. We have toys everywhere. There's books. Our waiting room is as big as one of our treatment areas because we have siblings playing. So,
yeah,
you know, we try to make it so that it's comfortable for them to be here.
So are most of your patient base, are they the kids that have really significant disabilities and lifelong type of issues, or do you also see the kids that get hurt on the playground?
We see both. I would say we are best known for working with kids with significant disabilities. We have some specialized equipment, and we do intensives that have gotten our name out there in those communities. However, we do also get injuries where we've had a few just straightforward orthopedic injuries. We don't get those as much because a lot of parents will take their kids to their adult ortho place that they have gone to in the past.
Right.
The ones that we do get are the kids that maybe have some other things going on, like the kids that get back pain because they have low muscle tone and don't know how to coordinate their core muscles to maintain a stability. And they're too young. Like, they just don't want to do exercises where we do play-based exercises. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll mix just standard repetitions and strength training in there, but we make it fun and play. So, you know, or we'll have the child that has some mild autism but has a sprained ankle. You know, so our kids that are orthopedic tend to have other things going on or are younger.
Yeah. And from a physical position, I mean, does it work? I mean, it's your reimbursement is probably a lot from government agencies and so on. And so obviously you're not going to do it for free. So it must work.
It does. You know, we're constantly evolving. We unfortunately do not take Medicaid at this point just because the reimbursement is so low in California that it would put us out of business, but we're constantly working to look at how we can help reform Medicaid because the only Medicaid providers are the hospitals and they already have a waiting list. I would say that our reimbursement from insurances is maybe not lower than an outpatient ortho place. However, we can only see one kid at a time.
Right.
Where we just did an interview with somebody that was looking to come to a co-op out here. And he was talking about his experience about how, you know, there would be two patients at the same time and he would be helping with one. And then he'd tell somebody to hold on a second. And we laughed because we're like, when there's kids, you can't just tell them to hold on a second and I'll be right back to you.
Right,
they're
right.
Either going to run away or they can't sit on their own or stand on their own. So we have to do a lot more one-on-one based therapy. So that does make our reimbursement per hour working lower than other places, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and that we're constantly learning about the laws and how we can apply them and how we can use other staff to help maximize our ability to see kids and get more kids in without decreasing the quality.
Yeah. So what's the big vision for your practice in the future? Is it just to make the facility or the place that you have bigger and see more kids or add more clinics, you know, partner with somebody else? Do you have any ideas of what the future looks like?
I definitely have ideas. We currently do have two satellite locations. Okay. We will see kids in Palo Alto one day a week, and we will see kids in San Francisco 2 days a week. So that's where we've kind of partnered with people in the community. So in Palo Alto, we see them out of an outpatient ortho place. They had a room, and they asked us if we wanted to use it. And so we were like, okay, we'll take advantage of that. It was interesting because it was trying to build a caseload where we had not previously had a demand for services.
Uh-huh.
So that was an interesting experience. And in San Francisco, we see kids out of a place that does mostly occupational therapy, but also has speech therapy. So, like I said, I like to collaborate with the people in the community. My vision would be one for us to be multidisciplinary. We're currently only physical therapy. We used to have occupational therapy, and our lead therapist moved away. And with San Francisco being expensive, and mostly a female career, there's a lot of females working.
Yeah.
You know, people get married or have kids. So our occupational therapy department shut down. But we had people from that other company. They come and see people 2 days a week out of our location so that we still can offer occupational therapy to our clients. And then we have a speech therapy group that rents a room from us. So we've tried to make it multidisciplinary, even though we don't have the staff as our employees. I would also like to expand to other areas. There's definitely a need here. We have people that travel over an hour to come see us because they can't find a place where their child enjoys going and can serve their needs. So I would like to continue to do small satellite locations and build them up that way.
Yeah.
In terms of partnership, I go back and forth on that all the time. I would love to have somebody maybe that could share the load with me, but I also know that going into partnership with somebody could be like getting married, and it's definitely works having to work on the relationship and to find that right person. And so currently I'm still on my own.
So not only are you running a business and a practice, but you also have done a lot on the national scene too, and you've been very involved in the private practice section and I believe the pediatric section, and you are editor of Impact Magazine, which is a great a magazine that the private practice section sends out. So that seems like a big undertaking, a big job. So what possessed you to take that on?
I love doing Impact. It's honestly my favorite part of it, besides the reading the stories and learning the stuff and working with the board, is doing our planning meeting in the spring, looking at what the members want to learn more about and laying out the calendar for the next year. It's that keeps me going for the entire year with Impact. I had been an editorial board member, so I had been one of the people responsible for getting the articles. And Angela, who had been the previous editor, had approached me, and I kind of laughed because I said, I'm not sure why you would want me. I don't work with Medicare. I actually know nothing about all the Medicare rules and the abbreviations and the requirements. And so that was my biggest hang up with saying yes to it, was that I just didn't know that if I could meet the needs of the membership, because there are a lot of people that work with Medicare. But she convinced me that I could do it, and I'm really glad that she did. And I think that the reason I've gotten involved is because when I came to the private practice section the first time, it is a lot of orthopedics. And as a business owner, I did want to learn more than just about Medicare. And so I kept asking, well, what about peds, or what about people that don't work with Medicare? And so I felt like I was a little bit of a squeaky wheel. And I have that rule with myself that if I'm going to be a squeaky wheel and somebody gives me an opportunity to step up to help find solutions to the problems, that I can't just say, no, I don't want to be part of that. So
that's a great rule. So what do you think is most members of the private practice section are worried about or want to hear about or learn about with your information as the editor of this publication? What's the biggest concerns out there that people want to learn about or hear about?
I feel that a lot of people are just concerned or worried about, I don't know that this is the right word, but the longevity of private practice and where it's going. Right now, there's a lot of bigger practices buying up smaller practices. And that's the way people have chosen to do their exit strategy. So I think it's them really defining what their exit strategy is or how they can stay in business. And then also, what are other avenues that they can still utilize their PT knowledge and not maybe go work for somebody else, but maybe take it into a different avenue. You know, there's a lot of people out there doing consulting or coming up with products or services that were physical, or I guess still are physical therapists, but they've gone a different route than the traditional private practice. And so I think it's just that where are we going with the future, and what's that future going to look like for me and my practice?
Yeah, definitely. So what pearls of wisdom do you have for our listeners on the leadership forefront here? What have you learned? What pearls of wisdom could you give our listeners as far as leadership going forward?
I would say, don't be afraid to ask questions. you don't always know what you don't know, but the more questions you ask, the more you learn, or it opens up other questions that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
And that's really taking advantage of the network around you or the other people. And then I would say the biggest piece of advice was one my dad gave me when, you know, I thought everything had gone wrong with my practice and I was calling him, and he had been a business owner as well. And I was like, I screwed up, I failed. And he said, which I've taken with me always, is it's only a mistake if it happens again.
Right.
So that not being afraid to take chances, and things may not go the way you thought they were, but if you learn from it and you take something from that and you don't make the same mistake again, then it's not a mistake. It's a learning experience.
Yeah. Learn from your mistakes. Learn from your mistakes. I love your point about asking questions. I know in my leadership training and coaching that I do, that's one of the things I teach, is that, you know, you don't have to always know the answer. And you just ask questions and keep asking more questions. And eventually through that process, either the answer comes to you or you gain enough information in asking the questions that it kind of resolves itself. So I think that's a great piece. I would even go so far to say, as a woman in leadership, women probably do that better than guys do, because guys always think they know the answer, right?
From my experience, yes.
So I think if we can learn from what we're hearing today, especially guys, you don't have to know the answer. It's like when someone asks you a question, it's okay to say, you know, I really don't know, or that's a great question. Let me do some research, or let me ask my peers, and I'll get back to you with that later. You know, that's okay. People don't always look to you to have all the answers. They look to you to help them discover the answer, so to speak.
I would agree.
So what are you excited about in the future? What's next?
So we last year restructured. I said we had done a whole bunch of things with redoing our vision, values, and it was just minor tweaks. But we restructured also the way we were running our business. We had taken advantage of a lot of opportunities over the previous 9 years, but they may not have always been strategic opportunities. And so we really looked at where we wanted to go. And like I said, we were building out that clinic. And just today, I was sharing with my staff the changes in percentages of revenue from a year ago to now, and how what we started on a year ago is actually happening, and to then just continue on in that path of, you know, being able to provide the services for the kids and to grow the business in the way that we want to. And like I said, our vision is to have it so that the world is more inclusive for kids of all abilities.
Yeah. It's so rewarding to see that when you actually do the strategic planning and you have a vision, and then you get strategic initiatives towards that vision, and you get everybody on board and everyone's working together to look back and say, wow, look where we've come. I mean, it does work.
Yes.
And it just doesn't happen. You have to do it with an idea and a plan and get everybody on board. And then it's amazing what can happen.
Yes. And it's important to look back, because it's so easy to get down with the day to day, but to look back and be like, oh, here's where we were and here's where we are now, and give yourself credit for that, and to recognize the achievements as opposed to always just looking at the obstacles.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stacy, thanks so much for being our guest today. I'm just real impressed with what you've been able to accomplish, and you've been a great leader in our section. And thank you for your work on Impact Magazine and other things you do. I think it really keeps the members together, and I know that that's a very sought after. Every time an edition comes, I hear people talking about it. And interestingly, I think you did a survey not too long ago, and people just don't want that to go away. They don't want it to become totally digital. Is that right?
They still that is
want,
correct.
They still want the physical magazine in the mail. Is that weird, or is that just PTs?
I know the majority of the people still read the magazine and prefer it that way.
Yeah.
So I think that's great.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work. And again, we appreciate all your efforts and contributions to our profession outside of just your own practice, but helping PTs across the nation. It's very admirable, and we thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a great day, and thanks for being on the program.
You too.
Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to check out our entire library of podcasts and videos at vgmadvantage.com. This has been Profiles in Leadership Podcast, and this is your host, Steve Anderson. Thank you for listening.